All right, I am here with Jessica Lederer. She is the CEO of OE Consulting Group. How are you doing, Jessica?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining me. Why don't we start off by getting a better understanding of what OE Consulting is all about?
OE Consulting Group stands for Organizational Effectiveness Consulting Group, and I call it a culture transformation business.
Okay.
So we help you transform your culture from whatever it is to whatever you want it to be so that you can be successful.
Okay, so what's a bad culture look like, and what's a great culture look like? Maybe give us kind of the best and the worst of the choices.
So typically the clients that I have, they hire me when something goes terribly wrong within the organization. Ideally, the clients I have would call me a little bit sooner than the total catastrophe that recently happened, but it'll be something like a lawsuit happens, or a complaint was filed, or many complaints were filed, or there's sudden attrition from a whole lot of people at once. And so the leaders realize something's not working here. We have toxicity in the culture somewhere. Maybe it's the leaders, maybe it's in the way that we collaborate, maybe it's in the way that we don't communicate. And we need to fix that. That's when we come in and figure out what's working in your organization, what's not, and how do we get you on path to where you want to be.
Well, I'm thinking as an entrepreneur, small, medium-sized businesses that I'm invested into, I'm wondering, what does a great culture look like? I mean, is there somebody out there that we might all know that we look to and go, a culture like that? Google is known for their culture. Are there people that you look to or companies that you look to as the standard?
It's really hard to tell from the outside in whether a culture is positive or not. And so Google is a great example. We can talk about that. There's the visible elements of culture, which everyone can kind of see, but that's really surface level.
Okay.
Then you get into the invisible elements of culture beneath that. So talking about Google, the way that people typically describe their culture, it's that they are very fun. They work hard. They're innovative, right? You can bring your dog to work. They have free food everywhere. They have free dry cleaning on site. And so it sounds like a really great place. I actually interviewed at Google when I finished my MBA and fell in love with the place because it looks so great. Then I started to dig a little deeper and asking people, well, what is the culture really like beneath the surface? There's a reason that they let you bring your dog to work every day, and it's because you have to work there all day long. If you don't bring your dog to work, your dog's going to die because you're not going to be home at all. And so they're doing all of those perks for their employees in an effort to keep them there because they're creating this culture of hard work. So if that's the kind of culture you want to be in, that's great. But it's
why would you not want a culture of hard work?
Well, some people value work-life balance, you
know?
And so if you value work-life balance as a culture, then you're going to go in a completely different direction. You might not offer free food because you're not trying to keep people on site. The free food is there so they don't have to leave and go to a restaurant. The dry cleaning is on site, so you don't have to go home and change. The free shuttle buses to get you from your house is, they have Wi-Fi on the bus so that you can work on your way to work.
Yeah. Well, thinking about that, so sometimes I've seen people overdo it. They spend so much time. I know of one company that had a place where you could go take a nap, and they're no longer in business because it felt to me, I don't know why they're not in business for sure, but they're gone, and they had spent all this effort on making it, the bring the dog to work stuff. And they forgot to sell anything.
Yeah. I mean, the issue with culture is that people think it's a touchy-feely thing, and it's really driven by outcomes, but leaders don't know how to talk about culture. So the way that we define culture, we have a formulaic approach. So outcomes is at the top of the pyramid. It's what results are you getting? What impact are you making? Well, outcomes are driven by behavior. So how are people behaving on site to get the outcomes that you want? And then what drives behavior is the systemic enablers and blockers. So that is either the formal or informal rules, rituals, behaviors, the systemic things that incentivize people to behave a certain way, which then creates the results you want. So when we work with organizations, we break it down to what are the outcomes you want, how do people need to behave in order to get those, and what in your system is making people do that or not do that. So for example, is your boss rolling his or her eyes when someone makes a comment about something that they said in a meeting? If so, you are then going to create a behavior of people not speaking up as much, which will create an outcome of less input and empowerment of your employees. That may or may not be what you're looking for. So when you asked the question earlier about what makes a great culture, it depends. There's lots of different kinds of culture, and there's not necessarily a right culture or a wrong culture. It's just what you're going for.
Sometimes management teams look at metrics, right? And I'm thinking when we start talking about the people side of things, how do we measure whether it's working or not? Is turnover a metric that we should be measuring? Is turnover even bad?
No, not necessarily. There are a lot of organizations that I've worked with that intend for turnover, especially after merger and acquisition. They don't want to lay people off. There's a lot of PR consequences to that. So they just make it really difficult for people to stay. And then hopefully 25% of the organization leaves. It's always subjective. It depends on what you're going for. So you can look at turnover. You can look at sales. You can look at productivity. You can look at retention, tenure over time. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to measure it. It all just depends on what you're looking for. So we start by asking the leader, what do you want? Tell us what you want outcome-wise, and we'll figure out how to get your employees there.
Interesting. So I think I've seen companies that seem like they've got it all together. You go into, I'm just going to pick another name that everybody knows. You go into one Starbucks, and it's, wow, it feels like the culture is really, really good. And then you get into, let's say, a different Starbucks that's a little ways away, and it's like, who are these guys? I've heard it referred to as like a bozo explosion. It's like you hire the one leader in the thing, and now it's they can't even attract good employees anymore.
Yeah, absolutely.
How do you fix that?
Well, it all starts with the leader. So in all the work we do, we start with the top. And if the leader is not bought into culture change, then I don't even take the client, because it all has to come from the leader. If we're going to change the system, if we're going to change the incentives, or if we're going to change the rules of the game, which will change behavior, which changes outcome, that all has to get approved by the leader. So one client, for example, was a local firm that asked me to come in. They had a committee of employees who were in charge of employee engagement. And the theory was this committee of employees, none of which were partner in the firm, were going to be in charge of changing the system to make people more engaged so that they would get more employee engagement. And I said, I'm not going to take you as a client unless one of the partners gets on this team. And they couldn't get a partner on a team, and so I didn't take them as a client because I knew that it would be a total waste of their money.
Well, how important is it? I'm a president of the Entrepreneurs Organization. We were talking about that a few minutes ago with our mutual friend Todd Ballenbach. and there's a culture in a group like EO. It's a nonprofit, but we have an entrepreneurial culture. And I sort of wonder, and we have a term in there. We say carry your own bags. You know, it's not, as the president, I don't drive the culture of this group of people. How important is it for the rank and file, the regular members of the team, to affect the culture? They have to carry their own bags, don't they?
They do have to carry their own bags, but I think it is a falsity to say that the leader doesn't carry the culture. I mean, it all trickles down. People are taking their cues from the leader, and if the leader is acting a certain way, everyone else will follow suit. And so if the leader wants to see change, they have to be different. One of the things that I say, and I used to do marketing this way, and I realized it didn't work because a lot of leaders didn't want to do the introspection, but we say we help you figure out what your blind spot is. Because ultimately, we're going to look at the leader and say, what do you want? There's a reason you're not getting that. Are you prepared for me to come back and tell you that the reason you're not getting the outcome that you want is because of something you're doing? And ultimately, it always is about the leader because they set the tone and everything. So I do think it's the leader.
How important is transparency for the leader? Transparency in the culture, letting everybody know clearly what's going on.
It totally depends on the kind of culture you're trying to create. So if you want an empowered team where have a lot of trust and therefore maybe increased risk as well, then you want a lot of transparency. But some cultures don't require that or need it, and so you don't need to be as transparent.
So thinking about when to call you, when to deal with the opportunity on my own, how do I, you know, how would you wrestle with that kind of decision? When do you need professional help?
Always.
Okay, so get out in front of it. Even if things are going good.
Absolutely.
And you want to change your company, you want to grow your company. Let's say I want to, you know, hire a bunch of people and grow my company. Get out in front of it with a consultant?
Yeah, imagine if I were to tell you, I can tell you the thing that you don't see is not working in your organization right now, and I can help you fix it before it becomes a problem. Would you be interested in that? The answer should be yes. The leaders that don't reach out to me before there's a problem always regret it once they have that sudden high levels of attrition that was unexpected, once they have the harassment complaints that are filed, once they have whatever issue they have that creates the need suddenly to create an intervention. If you can get ahead of it, why wouldn't you want to do that?
Yeah, good point. Well, thinking about your business, I mean, everybody wants to have a great team, but a lot of small businesses, they can barely get to profitability. They can barely survive. You know, the last thing I can afford to do is bring on a professional consultant. I'm on my third or fourth employee. I mean, what advice could we give to those people where they're not ready to hire you yet? I'm guessing you you know, don't do it for free, right?
No, I don't do it for free. So the field is organizational development. And typically this is the catch. When are you ready to actually bring on someone who can do organizational development for your organization? It has to do with the number of employees you have. It has to do with the kind of culture that you're trying to create and whether or not you're on track, how far off you are from the outcomes that you want. I would say that once you get to around 10 to 12 employees is when you want to really start considering making room in the budget for it. Before that, it's still small enough that you can manage. There's a lot more communication, a lot less silos in an organization that is less than 10 employees. But once you get to 10 or 12, you really want to start thinking strategically about the way people work together.
Well, give us an example of a horror story. You've gone in and you've given all the Jessica help you can, and it just doesn't work.
You know, that's a great question. So one horror story that sticks out in my mind the most was with a leader who did not want to accept. I asked the question to every leader, are you prepared for me to come back and tell you that you're the problem? Yeah. And they hopefully always say yes. They do always say yes because they don't actually believe that that's going to be the issue. I came in after I did this organizational assessment. So I'm interviewing people. I'm giving employees the safe space of confidentiality to tell me what's really going on. They're revealing that the problem is the leader, that he is totally toxic, that he doesn't empower employees, that he's out there in the community speaking to people that are not his employees, has no visibility into what his employees are doing. It was probably 25 people in the organization. We came back, we had a retreat, and I said, okay, here's the feedback. Step one is you listen to the feedback, you digest it. Step two is we have a group conversation where we kumbaya about this feedback. And the leader said, I'm not willing to share this feedback with my employees. I said, well, your employees are sharing the feedback with you. They already know what they said. So sharing it back with them is just an effort to say, I'm listening and I want to do something differently now. If you don't tell them what I said, I told you, they're going to know that you decided to shove it under the rug. And we had a long conversation about it. And ultimately, he refused to have a conversation with employees. So I fired him as a client because I couldn't help him if he wasn't going to be willing to address what was clearly his blind spot.
Interesting. Well, let's talk about your relationship with the client. You know, a lot of us, we have internal HR people, and you think about, well, when is it time to bring on a consultant or outsource some of this stuff that maybe I'm not so good at or I'm not a specialist at? And wondering around, like, what's the relationship like? Is that with the founder typically, or is that with HR? And are you, like, part of the team? I mean, how does that work?
So I am absolutely not part of the team, which is why it works. Because when you're part of the team, if you're an HR person, you're still an employee of the organization. Your salary, your promotion, your any possibility of advancement with the organization is still determined by your boss. And so there are politics in play that make you unable to be objective about what's going on. You have to have bias because you're part of the team. The beauty of a consultant is that they're not part of the team and they have the benefit of ignorance. I can come in as a consultant. I don't have a dog in this fight. I don't have an interest in it going one way or another. I'm just here to see what's going on, what's working and what's not. And I can ask the dumb questions. I can say, what's it like on an average day here today? An HR person can't ask that question because they have their own experience of it. So being not part of the team is what makes me effective in helping them see what is not working in the culture and how to change it.
Okay, so one final question is, some people know that I have billboards going up along the freeway. Marquee Media is our sponsor on that. And so there's messaging that I can put out on the freeway to the entrepreneurs of our hometown. If there's one message that you would like to get out to entrepreneurs, to employers, that would be billboard worthy, what would it be?
That's hard. Especially in this industry, it's difficult because culture transformation is so complex of a concept because there's so many systemic issues at play that trying to narrow it down and explain, like, this is going to benefit you for reasons that aren't incredibly clear, that may feel touchy-feely but are not actually, and it's going to help your bottom line, but it all starts with people. People are your results. It's difficult, but that's probably it. The people are your results.
The people are your results.
That's right.
Jessica Lederer, the CEO of OE Consulting Group, thank you for this education. You've motivated me to be better, and maybe it's time to think about bringing on the right business partners to help us to improve our team and to grow our results.
Great. Thanks very much.
You bet. Thanks, Jessica. If you like our entrepreneurial stories, if you like the messages that we bring that inspire, if you want a little more Mark Haney, not everybody does, but if you do, feel free to subscribe. feel free to be part of our community, engage, comment, share. I want to get to know you better. You want to get to know me better. Follow me on all our social media platforms at The Mark Haney. I look forward to knowing you better. And let's get to know each other better so we can help build these businesses that we love.